Hey, this is Rob Harder with Making Your World Better, a nonprofit leadership show where real stories from real people who are coming up with real solutions to solve society's biggest challenges. What does it take to be an effective nonprofit leader today? How do people fundraise in an economy that is constantly in flux? How do you relate to board members in a way that inspires them to make a difference? What are the best practices that separate effective nonprofits from others? It is my hope that through these episodes, people can learn not only what it takes to be an effective nonprofit organization, but to hear real stories from real leaders who are successfully making a positive impact in their communities. We hope you enjoy this series as together we hear how they're making their world better. In today's episode, I had the privilege of interviewing Maria Farrington, President and Executive Director of the Holy Cross Ministries here in Utah. She's going to talk about a lot of different things, but the primary thing I think you're going to take away is this whole idea of collective impact. What is it? In fact, she defines it, and she kind of put her own twist on it, and she talked about coordinated impact, not just collective impact. And I really liked how she said that. And one of the ways she does that is not only taking risks as a nonprofit, but she really seeks to get her board as her number one evangelist, if you will, for her organization. So she makes sure the board is completely engaged, completely involved. And then through that, they take risks together. And the end goal is to make the greatest impact that possibly can be through coordinated impact, not just collective impact. I think you'll really enjoy hearing from Maria. She leads Holy Cross Ministries, which actually started in Park City 140 years ago. That's a long time for a nonprofit to be around. And for those on the listening audience that are from Park City, you'd be maybe surprised to find out that it started right here with the miners in Park City. And these Holy Cross Ministry sisters were the ones that started this nonprofit organization. So you're going to really enjoy hearing from Maria today. Enjoy today's episode. In the studio today is Maria Farrington. She is the President and Executive Director of Holy Cross Ministries. Maria, great to have you on the show today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Rob.
Absolutely. Really glad to have you. You have a lot of experience in many different nonprofits. Currently, you're in Holy Cross Ministries. And today, I want to talk about collective impact. What is collective impact in your mind, and how is Holy Cross trying to do collective impact here, either whether it be in Park City or throughout Salt Lake?
Well, I think for me, collective impact really is a very broad term. So whether if you're living in Seattle, in Park City, or in Miami, it means different things to different communities. But the one thing that it has to do, and a lot of people sometimes will skirt around this, but I find it critical. If you really want to do collective impact, you have to know exactly what you're impacting. Is it poverty? And if it's poverty, is it in a particular community, neighborhood? Is it a particular ethnicity? Or if it's not poverty, is it education or lack thereof? Is it dropout?
So you have to be specific is what you're saying. You have to be really targeted.
Very specific, because I think that's where people get really frustrated. Collective impact means different things to different people. And when you get a group together, whether it's 2 or 22 or 200, they've got to be speaking from the same, at least from the same page in terms of starting the story. What is the collective impact? What is it that we want to do? What is the direction? And, you know, and those are the questions that come afterwards. But the group has to be very specific on what the impact, where do they want the impact? And when you have different groups, when you have different social service groups in that particular sector, when you have faith groups, when you have municipality, i.e. Elected officials, everybody will come to collective impact from a different direction, even if they can agree on what is that area. Is it education? Is it poverty? Is it housing? What is it?
So that's the starting point, sounds like.
That's
if you don't have that,
point.
You're not going to really do much collective impact.
And that takes a long time. Now, once people really can share the vernacular, share the language, share the situation, whatever that is, again, housing, poverty, whatever it is. Once someone who is in a leadership position can lay the landscape out, and say, this is poverty in our areas, and look at it different ways. And that's when your different groups, community groups, social sector groups, whatever, that's when they're able to begin the second part of it. And that is to say, I come to this discussion and to this table bringing X.
Right. So how's Holy Cross doing that? Sounds like you have some specific things right now, or maybe it's in a broader context with the Utah Nonprofits Association.
I'll give you an example. Just as I walked into this building, the Christian Center, you had a flyer on the door about in Spanish about immigration services.
Right, correct.
So let me answer your question using immigration services, legal services as the framework. We cannot be everything to everybody. We can't. But we do have immigration lawyers. Right now, Holy Cross Ministries has 4 full-time immigration lawyers.
Fantastic. That's probably one of the most of any nonprofit, I would guess.
I don't know. I should see that landscape. But then we also have 4 paralegals. But we still can't do everything ourselves. So we have to collaborate. So we collaborate, and for me, I could tell you very specifically what collaboration means is what we can't do but we know should be done, such as asylum. There are a lot of folks in the state of Utah, in northern Utah in particular, and in this community that are seeking asylum. They are seeking simply to come to the United States of America. They are leaving a very horrible and dangerous situation from their country of origin.
Now, again, this is different than refugees, correct? It's not
very
technically
different.
Refugees. So explain that for just people that are listening, what the difference in your mind is.
Well, asylum is simply folks that are coming, many from, say Venezuela, where there's a lot of gang violence, Guatemala, and they cannot go back to their country of origin because their life would be in danger.
I mean, got it. So that's seeking
that's,
asylum.
That's
but
seeking
it's not
asylum.
By the State Department. It's not declared, okay, you're a refugee.
That's right.
Got
that's
it.
Right. They usually come in with a visa.
Got it.
Refugee, on the other, is a status. The United States of America has given a particular group of individuals coming from, let's say, Cuba. I'm just going to make that
exactly.
up.
Sure, exactly.
That is a refugee. They have refugee status. Holy Cross Ministries has been seeing for the last year a lot of folks seeking asylum. We do not do that. But what we do is we recognize our mission for those in need.
Got it.
And we also recognize the things that we cannot do. We cannot. Asylum cases take a long time. We don't have that kind of time.
Got it.
So in the spirit of collaboration, to answer your question, what we were able to do is to pick up the phone, create relationships with private firms who they need, private firms in the state of Utah, law firms, that they need to do pro bono. They want to do pro bono. They have folks that want to litigate. So we are collaborating with them. The asylum seekers come to us. We do an initial consult. We turn around and work with our partner in the private firm.
Excellent.
So we're able to recognize first and foremost what we want to do, what should be done per our mission. Secondly, we recognize the fact that we can't do it, but we do know someone who can, and we will work with them. That's our collaboration in the justice, immigration, and legal.
Excellent example. So it sounds like, again, you don't work just with nonprofits. You're reaching out to the private sector.
Oh, yes.
You're working out to, again, government agencies and whatnot. So collective impact, in your mind, really crosses all different demographics and different groups. Okay.
Yeah.
And so we talk about that, maybe that or another example. What have been some of the results of your work doing that kind of collective impact where you're collaborating and working with other agencies?
Well, I'll stay just for a minute with immigration. So as we reached out and created partnerships and relationships, trusting relationships with the private bar, we really realized that there was not a lot of folks who had asylum law 101. So what we were able to do is sit down with our collaboration group and say, what if We brought in two or three speakers from across the United States. And what if we brought them in to provide some training across the board, training for lawyers, for paralegals? And what if we gave CLDs, their credit hours?
Oh, right, sure.
You have to have credit
hours. Sounds like a good idea. Yeah.
It was a big stretch, and I was a little worried because that was some funds that we had to put out first.
So Holy Cross Ministries had to initially put the money forward.
Yeah, but we also reached out to some other partners and said, will you sponsor this with us? Utah Bar. And lo and behold, we found that not just, because I said we have to have at least 14 people to break even, we had something like 64 people.
Wow.
So we were able...
You tapped into a need.
We tapped into a need, and that's what collective impact and collaboration, that is the gold at the end of the rainbow.
Right, when you actually meet a need.
When you actually meet a need, and you provide services for those in need.
Excellent. Great example.
Yeah, then you're able to actually measure your success.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one area that we've been able to... make some impact, but we're still measuring our success.
Well, I wondered about that. I think about other nonprofits or people that are watching and are listening to this show, and they try to figure out maybe from the for-profit side, why should they get involved? And it sounds like from what you're saying is that you don't have results right away, but you do have to be willing on the front end to invest.
Correct.
Whether it be the nonprofit and or for this matter, you know, maybe the for-profit sector that you're working with, they also have to invest. You didn't know if you're going to get 14, 15, 16 people, and you ended up getting a whole bunch of people,
yeah.
64.
And for nonprofits, really, I would use the term risk.
It is a risk, okay.
It's a risk for nonprofits. Now, for a for-profit, they knew they had litigators that needed to have CDLs, you know, credit hours. So it for them, it
much
was an
less
investment.
Of a risk.
Right.
Yeah, got it. Okay. Well, good point on that. Yeah, I think risk is, and I do think that's a really good term. Do you think risk is one of the main reasons why nonprofits don't do collective impact? The risks
No.
are just too high? Okay, what do you think
nonprofits
don't?
I don't think so. I mean, this is my own theory. My theory is it's scary.
Okay.
It's hard.
Talk about that, yeah.
I think it's scary because nonprofits work very hard to create their niche, whatever that is. You know, it could be just whatever the niche is for a nonprofit. You usually find that niche on your 990 or your articles of incorporation.
Sure.
But you work so hard that sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees. And you're afraid sometimes to even ask, well, you know what? We've put so much effort and we've invested so heavily in, you know, buying one program for intake for this kind of client, but we need more. But we're just going to keep on doing this because these are the tools we have.
Got it.
Instead of meeting the your fear right off the bat and picking up the phone and calling the Christian Center and say, can you help me?
Got it.
Can
so
you
just
help
getting over
me?
That hump to say, I need help.
That's right. It is scary. It's very, very scary.
Mm-hmm.
The other reason that nonprofits find that difficult sometimes is because they have worked really hard with their board of trustees, board of directors to say, this is where we need to put our resources. This is the area that we have to raise funds. And it's hard for sometimes administrators to go back and say, well, I think we need this now, you know.
To kind of change course a little bit. That's
yeah.
that's a
and
little bit risky with the board, isn't it?
And it's not, while you are, you might be changing a little bit of direction, what you're really doing at the end of the day is you're able to say, I am providing the best service for our clients. We have to adapt, and that's
right.
sometimes it's really hard. We have to adapt to the changing landscape of our communities.
Mm-hmm. Which is constantly changing.
Constantly.
Mm-hmm. So you feel like a good, effective nonprofit and nonprofit leader is one that takes risks, kind of watches and monitors what the changes are and adjusts to them. And then at the end of the day, though, just says, okay, to the board or to donors or to the outside in the community, hey, I need your help. We need to do this. We need to change course and do this over here. You feel like that's really critical. Otherwise, it's not going to happen.
And that's critical. That is a constant And usually that's the job, or should be the job, of the executive director, to really continually evaluate the landscape, evaluate what's happening. Right now we're in a presidential election.
Immigration's constantly being talked about, isn't it?
Immigration is being talked about. People might be working on a grant right now and thinking, well, gosh, will this grant, if XYZ comes in as the president, or if the Congress changes complexion, will these grants still be honored in July? July 1.
It's a real question, isn't it? Yeah,
that
things
is a real
can change
question.
Drastically.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I say nonprofits must constantly adapt. And that's why organizations such as the Utah Nonprofits is a really, really important membership for all nonprofits, because that group brings out and constantly surfaces new ways of doing, new laws, new board trainings. They help us adapt.
Yeah, excellent. Well, this is good. So moving on a little bit from collective impact to some other issues that we've talked about on the show before, and that is kind of coming out of that book called Forces for Good. You're familiar with that, Leslie Crutchfield and Heather McLeod Grant. In fact, Leslie Crutchfield was here last year, right? Was it
right.
In Utah to the UNA and national, or I guess it would be regional conference. So the fascinating book. I really liked the book. I thought they had some really, really good pointers for nonprofits. So a couple of things. Among some of the things they mentioned were these things. They talked about the most successful nonprofits spend most of their time trying to change entire systems in these ways. Number one, advocating for government policies. Number two, tapping into the power of free markets. Number three, nurturing nonprofit networks. And number four, building movements of evangelists, which they define as individual volunteers and supporters who advance their cause. And then to be effective at influencing external systems, number five, they share leadership internally. And finally, they adapt quickly to changing conditions, as you just mentioned. These, they felt like, were the best key six practices that great nonprofits used to have a markedly more impact than their peers. So let's talk about that a little bit. For you and your work, obviously, in Holy Cross Ministries, you've been in the United Way as well. How do you define evangelists? Because that kind of has some religious overtones, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And then how do you develop them?
Well, I think nonprofits have three ways to do that. And I think one is through the people that we hire.
So hiring is just key for you. Okay.
I think it is. And you have to be really true to individuals you hire. You have to say, this is our mission. This is what we believe. Let me give you some ideas about how we operationalize this. What does it look like on an everyday, basis?
So be really clear with the mission right up front.
Really clear. And you know what? A lot of people, honest people will say, Maria, I just don't know if I want to do that.
Sure.
I just that's not where I'm heading. That's one thing. That's one way. The other way is the belief of the administrator.
Okay.
I have got to believe it.
I have got to personally
believe it. I have got to professionally believe it. I have to walk the walk.
Yeah.
I have to do it every day. Every day.
So if you don't own it personally, how's your team going to own it, let alone
That's
your
right.
organization?
I'm claiming it. I am
I
claiming
like
this. So
you're the number one evangelist, if you will,
I'm
for your organization.
I'm the number one evangelist.
Yeah.
I believe it. I will defend it. I don't care who you are. I will say no. We believe this is the way that we want to go. And we would like for you to come this way with
us, too.
So
you're inviting people to join
all the time.
You and, the
all
mission.
All the time.
Excellent.
But the third group, I think, is equally as important, and that's your board of trustees.
Okay.
Your board of directors.
Yeah.
Your board of governors. Whatever.
However you define it.
However
right?
you define mm-hmm. it. They must be as committed. Not just as committed to the mission, but committed financially.
Got it.
They might not write the check. We would like to see them. We would like to see board giving. But they might use their sphere of influence. Just like, just the same, using the same system, if you will, of social media.
Right, sure.
We ask our board of trustees to bring to the table 4 to 6 of their friends or associates. Let us talk to them. They have to believe it. They have to be committed to it.
So that's your first group of evangelists is your board.
That's right.
Okay.
They cannot be fair weather. No one could be fair weather. Either you're in or you're out. There's okay. nothing in between.
So talk a little bit about that. Say you have a board member that's maybe on the fence. What do you do as an ED? How do you navigate that?
I am on the phone probably once every 2 weeks. Will you come to this meeting with me? I want to take you to this client's house. I want you to come to our staff meeting. I would like to. I just had the chairman of the board the other day. I asked him to come to my quarterly all staff meeting.
Excellent. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he showed up.
He showed up. Mm-hmm. He showed up. And I got to tell you, I put them in front of our staff, our clients, and our donors. That is really important to me. I want them to know what I am doing. I want them to realize that they are representing a group of people who are impacting our community, impacting lives, and changing the way we live.
So you're not just an open book. I mean, you're actually actively bringing them in.
Oh, you
come alongside me, follow me. Here's what I do on a daily basis.
Right.
I like that. I like that.
You have to be, I mean, and maybe that's not what everybody wants to do. I'm saying that's what I do. Because unless people are aware, unless people can connect, oh, I'm going to write this check for this particular program at Holy Cross. Don't know anything about the program. But I'll give you another example of what I ask my board of trustees to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that is, maybe it's because I'm from the South. I'm from Texas.
Are you? Okay.
Well, I've lived here about 23 years. But you know, to me, thank you notes, handwritten thank you notes, are really important. You know, they show your donors, they show your friends, whoever, that you're taking the time, your time, and your time is valuable, that you're taking the time to write a note. I ask my board members to do that for me.
Now, is that on an ongoing basis for every donation that comes in, or is it kind of selective times?
It's selective times.
Okay.
And usually larger gifts.
Right,
but
got it.
I ask them, I give them the note, I give them what I call the cordial, I put the stamp on it, and I ask them, please write Rob Harder and tell him thank you for his donation to, you know, the annual fund, whatever.
Right, right, okay.
Then they get a flavor of what we have to do to make impact. It's not just sitting in an office. It's not just going to a meeting. It is constant, and our board becomes evangelists, an effective evangelist. By doing.
Sounds like, yeah, they're very engaged. So you don't have a board that is just sitting back and comes to a couple of meetings. I mean, they're engaged. There's no choice but to be engaged.
And you know, I have a little different kind of board, Rob, in that because we are sponsored by the Sisters of the Holy Cross.
Okay, right.
A third of our board comes from the community.
Okay.
Which could be corporate, could be, nonprofit. Then a third of them are religious.
Okay, right, sure.
You know, Sisters
so are they
of the
priests,
Holy Cross.
Okay, or nuns?
Sisters of the Holy Cross. And,
got it.
And I do have Monsignor Fitzgerald, who was the past Vicar General of Catholic. And so we have different, and then we have the community, and then we have the third group is members that the diocese, the Catholic Diocese of Salt Lake.
And do you get to select who those board members are?
Usually,
do they kind of present, here are the three
usually
people?
Usually we help select.
Okay, so interesting combination. And so, have you found that that's been easier then to create evangelist quote out of them? Or has it been a little bit more of a effort because they're busy with their other things in the church?
But that's a good question. I think some of our sisters do not live here.
Oh, is that right?
So
okay.
That's a little...
So it's more of a regional board in that
right.
sense.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so some of them... And they're from California, they're from Indiana, they're from different parts.
Got it.
So that... And there is somewhat of a... Those folks can't come to all of the things that I'd like them to go to.
Sure.
But the ones in town, yeah, we're usually very successful in getting them in.
Excellent. Okay, now how do you translate then from, sounds like you're doing a great job with getting board members to be evangelists. Now, what about the average person that just wants to support Holy Cross Ministries, not in a position as a board member, but they would like to support Holy Cross Ministries? Do you do the same process? Do you invite like anybody to come to your board your staff meetings? Do you just like kind of, hey, come alongside? How do you get kind of that average Joe out there that is supportive of Holy Cross, but maybe you'd like him to move more towards a true evangelist?
You know, I think, and again, Holy Cross is very unique in that we've been around for 140 years.
140 years. I did not know it's been around that long. Years. That's
1875.
Fantastic. 1875. Wow.
The first long sisters time. Of the Holy Cross came here to Park City.
Is that right? First, with the mining probably
with
industry,
the mining,
huh?
They became big and critical helpers of the miners. They opened up a hospital, the first hospital. They had schools here in Park City and ministered to the miners.
What a great history. I've forgotten that. I don't think a lot of people probably even know that.
So a lot of, as you say, just, you know, normal people, they come to Holy Cross from a different background.
Got it.
Like we used to own Holy Cross Hospital here. A lot of, almost on a weekly basis, I get, oh, I was born at Holy Cross.
Is that right?
Yeah. Huh. So there's a lot of Holy Cross folks in Utah that know it from, Holy Cross used to run St. Mary's of the Wasatch, which was a girls' school.
Okay.
They opened up Judge.
So that was started by Holy Cross, okay.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
a lot of people know Judge, sure.
Yeah, so I have a lot of different people. So I always have to do one thing initially, and that is find out how they know Holy Cross. And whatever that is, whether it's health, whether it's education, whether it is just through the church, whether it is through Park City, immigration. In fact, I was this summer, I was staying here in Park City, and the individual who was the clerk at the hotel, he was from Ghana.
Oh, really?
And he asked me, I gave him my card, and he said, Holy Cross. He said, I'm here because of Holy Cross. Holy Cross did my immigration papers.
Is that right?
So
what a great connection.
It's a great connection. So first I have to find out how do they know Holy Cross? How have we impacted their life, whether it was 10 years ago or 20 years, whatever. And then whatever that is, I'm able to bring them up to the present. I'm able to say, we don't have a hospital anymore, but we are still working in Park City at the People's Clinic.
Right, People's Health, yep, sure.
People's Health Clinic. We are still working in Park City at
the after-school programs,
clinic,
right?
And the after-school mm-hmm. programs. So I'm able to bring them up. And a lot of our social media, ties into that.
Mm-hmm.
Only yesterday, we sent out for the very first time the first quarter programs highlight. And it's basically just to show and to share with all of those people, no matter how they know Holy Cross, what we did. What was that impact last year?
It's a great idea.
And then we'll follow it up later on in the third quarter with our annual report.
Got it. Okay. And it was a video report, is that correct?
No.
Okay,
it is.
It's a paper
report. It's on our website.
Got it.
www.holycrossministries.org.
Perfect. Okay. Well, that was going to ask you. So say someone's listening to this and they want to get involved with Holy Cross Ministries. What are your biggest needs right now? Do you need volunteers? Do you need support financially? What would be the biggest need and how can people help?
I think first and foremost, we're looking for financial support.
Got it. Okay.
So again, by visiting our website, you could donate. The second thing that we're looking for that I would like to really, and all of us need volunteers,
nonprofits, right?
Nonprofits need volunteers.
Absolutely.
We're looking for mentors. We're looking for folks who can help kids read, help in math after school.
So tutoring after school programs is a big thing.
Tutoring after school programs. Mm-hmm. Right now we're planning for our after school program in the summertime. When a lot of kids go on, you know, extended vacations, our children are low income. They don't go on vacations. Mm-hmm. But what we are planning right now, and we're looking for not only funds, but for volunteers, we're looking to develop our first STEAM summer camp.
Huh. Okay, talk about that a little bit.
Well, STEAM is, of course, everybody knows STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. We're adding
arts.
Arts.
I wondered about that.
Arts.
Excellent. Oh, that'll be great.
Yeah. So we are in the process of asking various companies and corporations to help not only with funds, but also with experiences. Like we have 2 days at the Leonardo, 2 days at the Museum of Natural History in Salt Lake.
A great idea.
Yeah. You know, it's learning, but you're having fun.
Sure.
And you're really tackling and becoming involved with analytical thinking.
Right. So that's this summer, and you're looking for volunteers to help
that's
too,
right.
In addition to financial support.
That is right. So
excellent.
We really want to move that needle intellectually. So when those kids go back, not only will they be excited about learning, they will hopefully be interested in those areas.
That's a wonderful service. You know, as we kind of wrap up, it's interesting because right here in Park City, we've had discussions about what are some of the biggest needs of the low-income community mm-hmm. here in Park City. And that's one of the biggest ones are kids that just cannot afford yeah. to go to arts camp or to sports camp or, you know, this club or that club. So to provide that for them, fantastic. It is a big need I see right here in Summit County, let alone in Salt Lake. So well done. So again, holycrossministries.org. They can donate, they can volunteer, they can find more about your organization. And of course, you're on Facebook, you're on, sounds like Twitter and
right.
social media across the board. So Maria Farentin, President and Executive Director of Holy Cross Ministries, great having you here today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Rob. I appreciate it.